listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Hi everyone, welcome to the SBS On The Money podcast for this Wednesday, the 17th of September 2025. It's a day where the Australian share market fell, the S&P ASX 200 down 0.67%. We'll have the details with Kyle Rotter from Capital.com in a few moments, including what he's telling his clients. But first, to the bank of mum and dad, where parents and grandparents are increasingly offering financial assistance to family members, with 20% saying they provided help in the last quarter. It's according to a survey by UBS. And for more, I spoke with UBS economist Stephen Wu. Stephen, so the bank of mum and dad is increasingly key for both consumption spending and the housing market. How so? And what are these funds being used for?
Yeah, that's right. So we just recently released our September quarter UBS survey of consumers. We survey around 1,000 individuals, and we've been doing that for about 6 years or so now. So we're getting a pretty good sample size and a time series as well. And we are seeing in the most recent data that the bank of mum and dad, and also, you know, grandpa and grandma, are helping younger Australians financially. So there's really two main ways this is occurring. So of those, they said they received financial assistance. About 55% of those said that they were receiving it to help fund living expenses. In other words, help with the cost of living pressures. And for those uses, the typical amount translates to roughly about $5,000 or so. Now, the second sort of largest component of financial assistance, where around, you know, one in four, I said, was really around the uses of the funds to buy a property. And of course, as you can imagine, this figure is a lot larger, typically somewhere between 50 to 200,000. So we are seeing signs that, you know, the bank of mum and dad are helping both to, you know, support and help with cost of living pressures, and also as well to get a foot in the housing market for their kids and their family members.
Yeah, that's quite interesting. The fact that these transfers are increasingly happening, like you mentioned, 20% providing financial assistance to a family member over the last 12 months. What does that say about the way younger people are coping with the cost of living?
Yeah, we know that cost of living has been front of mind for all Australians, not just younger Australians. You know, we've been hearing how they're trading down on what they're purchasing. They're spending less on discretionary items, and they're, you know, trading down as well in terms of the big ticket items. The good news is that this looks like it's becoming less of a top concern for households and for younger Australians. So we know that income growth has been quite strong. We know that inflation is easing and it's within the RBA's inflation target band. That means that real wages are growing again. So I think there is, you know, quite a good sign that the worst is behind us. And we're going to see, for those younger Australians, this boost to real incomes helping to alleviate cost of living pressures. And that's going to be beneficial for them and for the economy as well.
I guess one of the hot topics is that intergenerational transfer of wealth, right? Does it suggest, though, especially when we talk about access to property, right, does it suggest that older Australians are sitting on this significant wealth and may influence perhaps government policy when it comes to that transfer of intergenerational wealth, especially if it's whether wealthier Aussies are getting the majority of that assistance being handed down?
Yeah, look, I'd say that, you know, Australia is a very wealthy country, by some metrics, amongst the wealthiest in the world. And we know that a lot of that wealth is tied up in housing. And what our survey is showing that a lot of these sort of older Australians, so parents and grandparents, are actually, you know, moving some of this wealth and providing it to their family members, you know, their children, their grandchildren, such that they are able to meet cost of living pressures and also get a foot in the housing market. So I think that is pretty key, that we are seeing this intergenerational transfer and between families as well. And we do know, obviously, a lot of wealth in the country. And those that are lucky enough to actually get the support are going to be quite grateful. But obviously, not everyone is going to be quite so lucky.
Overall, though, so when you look at your report in general, How has this contributed to the way consumers are feeling at the moment and their intentions to spend?
Yeah, I think the key takeaway for us is really around household expectations for income. So they are amongst the most positive that we've seen over this sort of post-pandemic period. In fact, for middle-income households, the so-called mortgage belt, they've been the most positive since 2021. So again, as I mentioned earlier, we are seeing a solid labor market. Unemployment is just 4.2%. Inflation has come down significantly from its peaks in late 2022, and real wages are growing again. So I think that's giving households confidence about their ability to spend ahead. And in fact, actually, stronger income growth means that households are both able to spend more and also save more as well. So that's actually a good outcome for the economy. They're going to be more confident to spend and also be able to, rebuild buffers that have been eroded a little bit by cost of living pressures.
And so finally, if they're becoming more confident to spend, do they need more interest rate cuts? What's the RBA going to think?
Yeah, so I think how we've been viewing this data is it is showing us that the economy, in particular the consumer, is a bit stronger than we had previously expected. And we think as well, stronger than what the RBA had been expecting. So this survey data corroborates what we saw 2 weeks ago in the national accounts, when we saw household consumption spike a bit more stronger than we had been expecting. And that is, I think, a net positive for growth in the economy. So I think from that perspective, prior to some of this stronger data flow, we had been of the view that there was a risk that the RBA might deliver a further cut in early next year. So we still have for this year on hold in September, a cut in November, and that's going to be it in terms of the easing cycle this time round. But there was a risk always that the economy might not be responding as much, and therefore further rate cuts might be needed. I think the data flow over the past couple of weeks, both the hard and the soft data, suggests that this risk is receding. That's not really a bad thing. It's saying the economy is stronger, and therefore the RBA doesn't need to do quite so much to support the economy. So I think it is looking like a bit of a Goldilocks situation, I'd say, for the RBA. Unemployment's low, inflation is within target band, and we're looking like growth is picking up again.
That's Stephen Wu there from UBS. Let's now take a closer look at the Australian share market now. The S&P ASX 200 down 0.67% to 8,818. 8 of 11 sectors were lower. The worst performing sector, property, followed by consumer discretionary and materials. The best performing, though, utilities. And of the best and worst performing stocks, the worst include New Hope, down by around about 8%, followed by Deep Yellow, off by 8% too. It followed some good gains yesterday. The best two performers include Pilbara Minerals, up 4%, and Whitehaven Coal, up more than 5%. So for more on the day's market action, including a preview of tomorrow morning's Federal Reserve decision on interest rates in the US, I spoke with Kyle Rodder, a senior financial markets analyst at Capital.One. Kyle, all eyes on the US Federal Reserve tomorrow morning. Just how important will it be and what exactly is expected?
So it's very significant. What's expected is a 25 basis point move, and that's almost a foregone conclusion. But what the interest is in is what the Fed says about the path forward for interest rates, because there is a lot of dovishness, or effectively quite a significant number of interest rate cuts baked into the interest rate futures curve, which has been arguably the biggest reason why we've seen Wall Street and global equities push to record highs recently. So in short, market participants are basically looking for confirmation that that's the direction of travel for the Fed. If they don't get that, that could mean a lot of volatility. If they do, then maybe the bull run continues on Wall Street and, as we said, the rest of the world.
Yes, it's interesting because, like you said, Wall Street's at a record, particularly the NASDAQ. Shares are down today, though, in Australia. But you've got things like gold at a record. The Australian dollar is up for a sixth straight session. Run us through about just how this will influence the markets.
So basically, if we do get that guidance from the Fed, and that'll come in three forms, it has to be said. The vote split, which could be very interesting tonight because of some of the political dynamics, as well as the kind of almost philosophical differences between members of the board as to what the Fed should be focusing policy on. We also get the summary of economic projections, which is the updated forecasts for inflation, employment, and interest rates going into the future. And then we'll also obviously have the speech from Chairperson Powell at the end, which will add color to it all. Once more, the markets are basically betting that all of those things will indicate a very aggressive rate cutting cycle from here, which is one of the reasons why stocks are at record highs. Effectively, there is a slowdown going on in the US economy, but investors seem to be confident that things won't get too out of control as long as rates are cut fairly aggressively. If that doesn't happen, and they might strike a bit of a cautious tone about interest rate policy going forward, maybe because of inflation risks, stocks have to adjust to reflect that. That means probably a drop in the stock market. Gold probably drops for a similar reason. The US dollar recovers and the Aussie dollar falls off, for example, as a result. The markets aren't actually pricing in a great deal of volatility around this meeting, so it could be a level of complacency there too. But it's a high stakes meeting, and the markets are just really looking for indications of aggressive rate cuts in the future.
What about Australian rates? I spoke with an economist from UBS earlier today. UBS saying that spending intentions are at the highest since it's measured them in 2019. Run us through how you're seeing how the consumer is feeling, and if there is a real threat the RBA may delay or even halt further interest rate cuts as a result.
Well, the markets are certainly pricing that in recently. And obviously, the employment figures that we get on Thursday will be interesting because the RBA has probably shifted its focus overall from getting inflation back under control. It's pretty much at its midpoint now and focusing on some of the weakness in the labor market. But one thing recent GDP figures have told us, and even the RBA has alluded to in recent speeches, is that it's confident that consumer activity is going to pick up in the not too distant future, in a very, very strong way, but it will pick up in the not too distant future, mostly as real wages pick up. So wage growth is above the rate of inflation at the moment. We're also getting some of that kind of drip feed through of fiscal support from tax cuts, debt forgiveness on HECS, for example, from the government, and other sort of spending measures that are sort of subsidizing household activity. So it looks like we've kind of turned a small corner when it comes to household activity. If that picks up a little bit, the labor market remains relatively stable and inflation is still in the high twos, that kind of doesn't give the RBA much impetus to cut interest rates, albeit there is still about one cut priced in before the end of the year.
Okay, so with this economic environment that we're in, what are you telling your clients right now? Where do you see the opportunities for investors?
So what we're saying this week, and the caveat here is our clients tend to be risk takers that thrive on volatility and are much more short-term in their view. Obviously, time horizons and risk appetite is always the most important thing in markets. I'm telling people to be wary of the complacency. And the reason why I say that is that although the pricing's probably shifted a little bit this week, the implied move for the S&P 500 around this Fed decision is about 0.8% either direction, which to put into context is actually historically low. The VIX is low, stocks are at record highs, everything's rallying, everyone is kind of pricing in the best possible scenario for the future. It wouldn't necessarily take much to see volatility spike once again and things to get a little bit hairy, albeit once again in the short term. So that's what I would be wary of, that perhaps we're in a complacent spot and that it wouldn't take much for volatility to lift off once again.
That is Kyle Rotter there from capital.com. And he wraps up the podcast for this Wednesday. Don't forget, if you enjoy it, to give it a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and to click subscribe.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.